spent fighting a falling sky. The raven soars from the summit, quivering, ebony jibs, worldscaped in azure, ocean of crag and wind. My hoarse cry glides to you, spanning granite ledges, the bright cord tautens. You begin to climb the gully, our umbilical drawing you in. Perched, I peer below. Your face sparkles into view. Route done, we're reunited. The joy of a long way to go. Good evening. And thank you for coming. You're all very well. I'm delighted to be reading at Ovale, a great wee place with a very big reputation. You've been actively supporting poetry for 5 great years. Well done. I'd like to say a big thank you to Paul Casey for inviting me and for helping to keep this creative show on the road. Tonight, I'm reading a selection of poems from Latch, my debut collection, which is behind me. It was published by Lagan Press 15 months ago. Now, I was supposed to be here last year, shortly after the publication, but last year was very dramatic for me. For unexpected reasons, an emergency admission to hospital with a life-threatening illness, then major surgery and a long, long recuperation. So truly, I am delighted to be here, fit and well. Was set in the mountains of North Wales. My next one travels to North Africa during an important time of devotion to a place where a dry wind called the Jibli blows in from the Sahara. Ramadan in Jebel Zaro. Crystal sun rays speckle the stony desert, green, vermilion, and blue. Ben Brahim, the Berber guide, heads on through thorny scrub, spare and sparse. Sun succulent, loved by mules, others bleached, ready to burn, sparking from campfire to the stars. The Jibli brings the dust of centuries, Tuareg roaming with their camels in the vast debris of lost rivers. My father, struggling to lead his patrol around enemy lines and back to base. Sandstone ravines meander to the deft, clay-walled Kasbah, a fertile haven on traders' routes of salt fruit and slaves. The many tribes of Africa, bloodlines joined in the children's faces. They loiter, we dally and play. Curious strangers, still mingling amid the rites of dusk. Homestead. At the end of the abandoned lane, among stubby fields of nettles, couch grass, and docks, the old house squats. A mudded cattle trail curves to the empty gate and wanders on, choked to the lintels with briars. Rotten window frames gape beyond dangling slates. A sycamore where rooks refuse to nest. Forcing thorns apart, I step in to the parlor. A barren grate, the tiled mantelpiece shrouded with cobwebs and the drained bodies of insects that kicked their last as Jim Reeves crooned on the radio. Filthy strands embrace a deserted soldier in the milieu beside him, a teddy's eye. Broken tiles crunch to the thick, square sink where stains couldn't be erased. And a rattled enamel cooker, its oven door clasped by bramble spikes, still darning against the ungrateful child who wanted. From the Forest of Dean, on the border between England and Wales, the place where I was born, to the Cuban slang for hustler, jinetero is a young male hustler. Jinetera is a young female hustler. And they both appear in this poem. Havana, cabaret. The guts of a grand hotel, stuffed with 50s Americana. Yellow-finned Chevrolet convertible and chromed maw of Buick sedan. The dance floor, a protruding glitter-gold tongue. Cuban octet stuck in the throat. Sharp white suits, red bow ties, swinging out somewhere over the rainbow to tables scattered like spittle. In place of Lucky Luciano and the mob, indentured natives jump a generation or two. Lined white hands renting young mulattoes. A curtain call, and the DJ starts. Hinetero waves across the floor to Hinetera. Each confers with old flat-footed squeeze. Sparkling, they join in ecstatic dance and return to be yoked to their owners. My first job was in Italy, teaching English. I was in a small town near Milan called Crema. The director of the language school was quite a character. The office of the chief. Behind his mahogany desk are framed diplomas and honours, an expanse of gilding, signatures and red wax seals. He loves to gesture towards, sprawling back in the buttoned leather chair as you remain standing. All dubious, confides Leo, especially one as a fighter pilot in the Second World War. Grimacing, he seizes the joystick and the banking fast twin machine gun spurt. Then he dissolves to a pouting bambino, waving little arms and gaping around the cockpit. English at night school. Luigi's stubble matches the black leather. The jacket crinkles, but his face doesn't. Playing teacher, I beam and jest. He grips the book like a shield, staring into it, uncomprehending, resentful. I lived and worked in Manchester too. There was a lot of redevelopment happening in the city, street after street of terraced houses were being knocked down, leaving acres of rubble. It looked broken and empty, like a day after the Blitz. The only buildings left standing were the pubs on the corners. Visitation. Sprawling cloud, a dank street corner. The opening light within. Planet-scaped faces, sparse hairlines receding, bitumen coughs, fag ash fluttering to the sticky carpet, kamikaze grey. Glasses scrape, the evening wheedles along. Dogged
and awash. We're marooned. Still turn out. A stranger. I hadn't entered another world. It had set foot in me. Deserts. I came at the call, holding my fears and wishes, stationed either side of the bed. We watched him for 3 days, unconscious but twitching under oxygen mask and drip. Marge kept addressing him in a crisp, measured voice, as if a wayward child, slow to mend his ways. No response. Nothing but the insistent hiss of the tubes. They showed us the scan. A great blot at his left temple. Speech, swallowing, and continence astray in this barren stretch. A tank commander, he endured desert battles, capture, and camps. 3 months of pumpkin soup in Bari. Years of hunger inside Stalag 8B. Liberated by Patton with ivory handled revolvers. In Palestine, he'd been delayed for the meeting when the Stern gang's bomb exploded on time. He begins to regain consciousness for seconds, then minutes. The mask comes off. He tries to speak, but nothing utters from arid lips. Slid down on the right, a worn out leer. With a keening nasal cry, he focuses on Marge. 50 years. And they don't need talk. Holding hands like sweethearts before watchful family eyes. I reappear with gifts. He fingers them like strange artifacts. Puzzling for a while on my message, as if encrypted in a foreign tongue. Opening a photo book of deserts, I patiently turn pages for him, hoping to kindle the resourceful heat of his early prime map making under the Saharan sun. Rendezvous at the fig tree in 4 days' time. They laughed, jumped into jeeps, and motored past the pyramids into the vast western desert. Wavy hair slicked back, sleeves rolled up on khaki fatigues. He shone confidence in the camera's bright gaze. Now, he's shrunken into Ward 6, propped up but weighed down by the pillows around his head. I kiss him goodbye, cloudy blue eyes looking confused. The engine starts up and my tears spring. Oh, Dad, we'd just traversed that void, slowly gauging each other's presence. In the grain of your workshop, wood rich, we fashioned a template of respect, belated confidences offered like treasure. Dusty tools now languish in this dumbed shed, and I must complete whatever remains, speaking for myself. Conviction. A loop of rope with clenched knot, a blindfold, and fusiliers, a blade above a block, a hypodermic or cabled seat, a stake surrounded by logs, a heap of stones, the cross. In your eyes, a scattering of islands, reefs, concealed bays, and exotic vegetation, strange ecosystems parted by dangerous channels, fishes swirl and mollusks creep as trenches plunge into your remote protozoan dark. Unpacking. In memory of Jill Banks. We begin to unload the garage, a storehouse crowded with leftovers from stranded years in rented rooms, nosing through piles of boxes. The brother and I chuckle at favourite shoes, scuffed, unfashionable, and bent. Old albums, James Brown, Blondie, T-Rex, and, best of all, the shirts I used to boogie in. Under heaps for the jumble and debris the dump, we reach the big red trunk. In the bedroom of our house, I'd sat with it the evening before the service, a vigil with scraps and shreds that would not rest. Hauled out into the light, it glowers. I turn towards Robert, but he must have slipped away, then back to the trunk, heavy with rivets at reinforced corners in black. I struggle forward, grasp a stiff brass latch. Creaking, the lid cleaves open. I kneel before the trove and unwrap jewelry, birthday cards, snaps, quirky souvenirs, perfume, faded tickets, a bundle of my love letters. Those vital moments that fleeted and flew away return their precious cargo so gently. Hushed, we're talking, and I caress your skin. Wings. Nearing the summit, she lost her grip and fell. The rope braced, but the tape slipped through. Her unleashed body tumbled into space. Arms extended, graceful head high, legs swept back, the bright winter air streaming by. Birds fled. The rocks below spread their bulk and drew her down, plummeting to earth. Arms outstretched, I hold. I'm going to read just a couple more poems. This next one's called Albie's Phantom. For justice, Albie Sachs. I expect most of you have heard of Albie Sachs, but I'll just say a little bit about him. Albie Sachs was a white South African lawyer who defended people charged under the apartheid laws. He was imprisoned, then exiled, and very nearly killed by an assassin. He lost an arm and an eye in the attack, but he still became one of the key architects of the new South Africa. He visited Belfast in 2003. I met him and this poem emerged. Albie's Phantom. Without me to steer it, the indigo arm of his suit flutters and swerves. He's speaking on truth and reconciliation. Again, that hand an anchor, trapping his notes to the desk. This sleeve, a flag of passion, the vacant space that's rightly mine. long after the car bomb in Mozambique. He's told the secret agent wants to confess. At the commission, a chance meeting. The agent sheepishly makes to shake. I scream, "You've already taken me, you bastard!" Albie pauses, then proffers. "Here, I have another one." Twilight, Chukurpa. Chukurpa is an Aboriginal word that means foundational beliefs and spiritual truths. Twilight, Chukurpa. In a lost ocean of terracotta sand bulges the blood-red shoulder of an ancestral being at rest. As visitors clamber like ants, bright sun crawls across the tussocked plain of yellow spinifex. Scattered groves of mulga trees still their agile leaves. The land offers up its warmth. Crimson biceps gather and stretch, rippling from a great scapula, 6 kilometers across. The ants scatter and snap over scarlet flanks. Sunfire pulses, flares. A conflagration scorches to the summit and soars into a glistening sky. Haloed in ultramarine and violet, Uluru stands serene. A beacon of the spirit, rooted in the earth's core. This eager